Gavlik, who's unmarked as he streaks away into an open goal.
Hit the boundary line.
Oh, the post is broken. Matthews hit it.
Boy, oh boy, wow, wee. He shoots towards goal. What more can you say?
This is the Super Footy Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Round 19 Super Footy Podcast for TAB. Who are you backing? I'm back, Robbo. It's 2 weeks. The rating said,
bring
stay
back
with
Scott
it.
Gallen.
That's it. Mark Robinson's here, John Anderson's here, and Brian Taylor. Morning, Brian.
Morning, gents. How are we all?
I'm really good. How was the Red Centre, Brian?
The Red Centre was absolutely fantastic. You know, there's games that you get excited to go and watch, like, you know, this Friday night, Richmond Collingwood, but I was excited, even though it was Melbourne West Coast in Alice Springs, simply because of everything that's surrounding the game, you know, the culture and the experience of being in Alice and seeing what we saw. I was there for a good 4 or 5 days as well. It's just an amazing place, and I hope that came across on the TV because it was great fun for us all.
Tell us about Liam Jarrah. Did you actually go and see him in his community, or did you meet him in Alice Springs?
No, his community is about 250k away, and we heard during the week when I was there that he was in town, so we went hunting him. Gilbert McAdam's a good hunter, and and we took him on board, and the first port of call, we found him surrounded by about 20 of his relatives there, and were able to nail him there. And then he, of course, went to training that night. So he's a guy that's in a good spot at the moment. He's sort of recovered from where he was quite dramatically, and he's with this Red Tails program, which has got him a job, and all of a sudden he's heading in the right direction. So it was great to see him, and great to see that he's back on track.
Take this for what it's worth me saying, Brian. I reckon you do a wonderful thing and a lot of things for the Indigenous people of Australia. And people might not know this. Myself and Ando were talking about it in the office, weren't we, John? 2 days ago, yesterday, actually. And you may not want to talk about it, but why? You seem to have a passion for helping Indigenous people. Can you tell us where that's come from and what do you get out of it, if anything?
Yeah, look, I guess where it's come from is I went to school in a little place in Western Australia called Pinjarra. So I went to school with all of these kids and, you know, Ernie Dingo and Sean Morris and Theo Keering, who are all great stars in the West over there in the Waffle, et cetera. And having been brought up with these guys, you have a really good understanding of where they're at and what things they're up against in life challenges. And so I guess there's a bit of empathy there from that point of view, understanding them, not copying the crap when they're serving it up, but distinguishing that from the real stuff, and you can have a real conversation. So it probably all started there. And then, you know, with guys like Leon Davis and Aaron Davey and, you know, Gilbert McAdam and all of these guys that I've come across in football since that particular time, it's prepared me to be able to communicate with these guys the way they want to be communicated, because they are a little bit different, and they have a different understanding of culture. And I've been fortunate enough, like during last week, like Gilly took me around. He introduced me to every cousin, every brother, and just the wealth of knowledge that he was able to unload on me in just 4 days was stuff that I already thought I knew, but I didn't. Absolutely amazing. It's these guys do it hard. I tell you what I'd love to do. And Gilly told me this, he'd love to grab Nick Kyrgios by the ear, drag him to Alice Springs, take him out to where we went, and show him just how lucky he is, and it might actually click with him, because these guys have a very, very tough go of it.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say Bernard Tomic as well, but I think Bernard, that boat might have sailed too far away already, but Kyrgios might be a chance. I remember years ago, when you were in a previous life, you had a farm not far from Melbourne. You used to get some of the Indigenous blokes out there and do a bit of spotlighting with, I remember, was it Leon Davis? You had I remember you telling me you had a hairy route in the ute one day going down. When I say route, that's R-O-U-T-E, Brian. Going down a hill where it was pretty wet. And
thanks for clearing that up.
A bit worried about losing the brakes. Tell us that story.
Couple of stories. They Leon would ring and say, "Oh, I'm bringing the boys out. We're going to go kangaroo shooting." And you know they're allowed to do whatever they want in that area, and we had a permit anyway. But he'd say, "I'm bringing one or two mates out." He'd roll up with 13. They'd all be armed to the hilt with all their ammo and guns and the whole thing, of course, which they've got licenses for. And Leon pulled out, I said, show me the ammo you've got. And he pulled out these bullets, and fair dinkum, they were nearly a metre long. I said, mate, they're going to reach Melbourne. We just need to reach that rabbit over there. We don't need to fire on Melbourne. And he said, nah, it's all right, brother. It's all good. So he jumped in this ute, and there were about five in the back, five in the front. And when it was a wet night, and we went out very, very hilly country, and we started to aquaplane down this hill. And I'm thinking to myself, I knew very, very steep hill, probably a gradient of 30 degrees. I knew that we weren't stopping, and I knew there was a tree about 50 metres ahead, and that was our only chance to slam into the tree. So as we're aquaplaning down the hill with all these guys with loaded guns in the back, I've told them to jump. And when I just before I told them to jump, I thought, geez, I'm going to get a bullet in the back of the head going down the hill here. And so they jumped out. Rupert Betheris was in there as well, and did his hamstring when he jumped out. And this, I think, was a week or so of the grand final that they were playing in, and he didn't play because of a hamstring injury. Jumped out, did his hamstring, and we slammed into the tree, wrote the car off. And I said, well, what do we do now? And they said, oh, well, it's all right, just leave the car here, we'll walk home. And I said, but it's my car. My car's wrapped around that tree there, you blokes. You're going to help me get it off? No, nah, brother, we're going back now. We're going to skin these roos and get on with it. So they're amazing, amazing company.
Good insight, Brian. Good insight.
Very interesting. Now, what is interesting is the coaching landscape. And I'll ask you, gentlemen, Mick Malthouse, the great Mick, hasn't ruled himself out. He's the talk of the town again. What do we think? Could he make another resurrection?
He could. I think it's a long shot, but he could. Got a phone call this morning from someone saying that St Kilda might be interested in Mick Malthouse.
As a senior coach, probably, or as a mentor?
A mentor kind of role.
But how does that really work with
a
guy like Mick?
Well, Mick would have to change his ways a little bit. Brian, you know him really well. He's been the alpha dog at his football clubs for 31 years. So Mick would find it, I would think, a challenge, but not a one that he couldn't overcome, a challenge to become a mentor role, but for someone younger.
But surely that would depend on who the coach was going to be, because if it's some young bloke that has no interest in having a mentor look over them, and that, isn't that relevant?
Yeah, it is very relevant, but, you know, there's been a lot of talk this year, well, second half of the year, about do football clubs change their coaching setup? Do we just go with the senior coach again? Do we look at maybe having a different formation, a mentor, a motivator, a strategist? I don't want you guys to think of Grant Thomas, but Grant Thomas, when he was coach of St Kilda, he was like almost like the motivational coach, and Bundy, Matty Rendell. Bundy was the architect of the strategy and tactics, and they worked really tightly together. Bundy knew what G. Thomas's strengths were, and Tomo certainly knew what Bundy's strengths were. And there's no doubt that Mick's had an ability, not so much a Carlton, but Mick had an ability to motivate players, didn't he?
Yeah, the players played for him, Robbo. There's no doubt about that. And he was a good motivator of men. You're quite right. Look, I reckon he'd be all right. When you're the senior coach, you clamp up and you close up and you become grumpy and you get absorbed in what you're doing, and no one sort of likes you that much. And that happens with everyone. And I reckon not being the senior coach, but being the overseer at St Kilda, I reckon Mick would have a completely different attitude to that job just by the pressure that is not on him, but on the coach. Also, it would give St Kilda the opportunity to go for a young coach. They wouldn't have to go for a tried and true coach. They could go for someone young, take the risk, knowing that Mick's there to lean on. And I reckon Mick could really respond to a job like that.
Geez, a big presence to have looking over your shot. Mick, you say he's a players person, Robbo. I can remember when we didn't get on as well with Mick. I get on with Mick these days, but sometimes you do stories, and we're guilty of this, where you might try and find a voice which you know is going to be negative towards that person. We've all done it. And I might go through some of Mick's players, and you could ring six or seven players. It was hard to find someone who didn't rate him. Yeah. Seriously, very few players from who he coached don't rate Mick Malthouse.
He's such an incredible character, Mick. He's a polarising figure, no doubt. When I first heard his comments on the weekend, I thought, oh, really, Mick? It's almost like you're begging. You know, and you're a great of the game. And I didn't like what Nick Graham did. I didn't like the former Carlton player, laugh out loud. I didn't like that. One's played 46 games, the other one's coached 716, the most in AFL history. We've got to have a little bit of respect. But as more I've thought about it, the more I'm thinking, well, I can understand why there can be some sort of attachment by a club.
If he was American, he'd be working still now.
Yes, he would be.
Yeah, in a basketball or gridiron, doesn't matter, in the baseball, any of those three sports, he'd be working now in some, possibly as a head coach.
Here's a personality who might be able to handle it. Sam Mitchell is, we think, in 5 years will be a gun. He's got the personality to handle Mick now. Why don't St Kilda bite the bullet? Put him in there on training wheels with Mick.
And that is an interesting one. See, I reckon, I'm like you, I reckon Sam Mitchell's out of the guys that haven't coached, he's the one that's probably closest to ready to go. But just on the personality base, I reckon that would be the wrong one to work with Mick, because I think Sam probably thinks he's ready to go now, maybe thinking a couple of years ahead of where he's at, but I still like Sam Mitchell. I think he's ready to go. But just, to me, that would be the wrong matching of personalities.
What a matching of personalities. Say Mick did go to St Kilda. Say he did. You got Simon Lethlean. You got Gubby Allen. I don't think that'd be an issue, Gubby and Mick working together. They've done that before. Mick, BT, you're at Collingwood? No, you weren't. No, you weren't at Collingwood. You worked with Mick. Where did Gubby work with Mick? Anywhere?
No, don't think he has.
Oh, he left Collingwood, went to Brisbane. Sorry, yeah. When Mick got there. Yeah. You know, Matthew Finnis, the CEO, Andrew Bassett, the chairman. I mean, Mick's no shrinking violet. Mick walks into a football club, and that football club knows that Mick's there. It would be a hell of a machination to see how all that sort of behaviour and relationships turned out.
What about moving on to North Melbourne? Rhys Shaw's going to be formally interviewed. Do we still agree he's maybe a couple of weeks away and it's just fait accompli?
Depends who you can get. Depends who they've got on their radar, Johnny. Like, you know, if they've got someone good we don't know about, could even be a current coach, who knows. But it depends who you're comparing him with. You know, and I'm not so sure. I'm just not sure about these fill-in coaches and the lack of pressure on them, the ability they can play the way they want. They don't have to formulate a particular style or method in the way they're going to go about it. The boundaries are set very, very wide for the players. They can play on instinct. I'm not sure he can do that. I think they're all changes. But, look, he seems to be doing the job. He's got himself an interview as a result of how he's gone. There's no doubt about that.
How many interim coaches have then gone on, got the top job, and Paul Roos springs to mind, went on to become a premiership coach and been successful? Most of them don't get the gig, do they?
No, most of them. I spoke to Andrew.
Peter Rode had a go at Footscray.
He got the
job.
Didn't
go well.
Yeah. I spoke to Mark Brayshaw, the head of the Coaches Association, for an article in today's paper. And he and his association warns all of them, all the interim coaches, hey, milk it for what it is. You're probably not going to get the job. Yeah. They were really strong comments, actually. You're probably not going to get the job. Mm. Milk it for what it is. Get all the experience you can. And history tells us that interim coaches stay in the system a lot longer than just normal assistant coaches. And I was quite taken back by his comments, actually. Because my understanding, I want to say it's my understanding, I think it's absolutely logical that Rhys Shaw will be coaching the Kangaroos next year.
But Carlton's a different case, isn't it? There's no way they wanted David Teague to be this successful. It's completely stuffed up.
I wouldn't say no way they wanted it.
I think it's taken
them by surprise.
And so now they've got an issue they didn't think they'd have to deal with.
Well, it depends, again, as Brian says. And if you hear, if you've heard anything, Brian, jump in. But where's Ross Lyon next year? Is he at Fremantle? If they don't give him a contract extension, he's got a year to run. And then Carlton comes through with a five-year. Or St Kilda come through with a five-year. Does Ross Lyon say, sorry. He's a father and husband. He's got to look after his family.
Well, he's going to go where he gets longevity, I would have thought. This is very similar to Gary Ayres at Geelong, Scotty, you'd remember, and Robbo and BT, 99, I'm going to say. Brian Cook came in.
Yes.
Gary Ayres had a year of his contract left. He went to Brian Cook and said, I want an extension. I think this is right.
No, this is
I want an extension. And Cook said, at this stage, I'm not positioned to offer you that. I'm not saying you won't get the next job, but we're not going to give you an extension. He had an offer on the table from Adelaide. Three or four years.
Through Blighty.
So he took... Yeah, so he went to Adelaide, which, fair enough. Don't blame me. So I would have thought Ross Lyon will go where he's got longevity. And if that's either with this, Carlton or St Kilda, either way, we're not talking North Melbourne, we're talking Carlton or St Kilda, yep. There's enough to say, well, there's something to work with.
Oh, yeah.
At both those clubs. Yeah, absolutely. There's something that doesn't quite fit hand in glove with Rossi and the Dockers at the moment. That's only a feeling. I don't...
Dockers would be a good gig, BT.
I got that feeling as well, Robbo. You're right. There's something... I won't say it's not even... It's not quite right. There's just a strange feeling there at the moment. There's just... The things are playing out strangely.
They are. Like Steve Rossich, the chief executive, there's talk that he might not be there next year. And I don't like sitting here talking about people losing their jobs, but this is the scuttlebutt. You know, the people are now saying, and it's really interesting because I'm a sort of a pretty simple sort of character, and I don't think, I don't sort of understand the sort of spy v spy world very well. I take everyone on face value, but now people are trying to tell me, did the board send Peter Bell, who was a board member, did they send him down to be head of football to assess Ross?
Okay.
And then make a decision on Ross, because there's talk now that Peter Bell could replace Steve Rossich as CEO. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, wow, is John Clancy? Is it John? Not John Clancy. Is some of those
John Licaro?
John Licaro. I'm thinking, what's going on? Anyway, there's plenty to look at.
The person sitting one back the fence, if Freo opens up, how good a gig's that? If Ross does a runner, oh, first hand up there.
You know, the West Australian mob. Well, as anyone, Brian, they'll be pushing Peter Sumich something fierce, won't they? You're speaking to Brad Hardy. If you speak to Brad Hardy, Ross should have been out of the joint 3 years ago.
Well, they're not overly close, Rabbi Brad. And, no. Brad and Ross, it's fair to say.
No, they're not.
And the word was before Bally took that job there that he wasn't incredibly supportive or didn't think that Ross had done an absolutely brilliant job there. And I think there is something in what you've just said. I really do. I don't know that Peter Bell thinks that Ross Lyon is the right person.
Yeah, well, Ross Lyon is not a premiership coach. He's been within, what, almost four grand finals?
Yes.
Two with Collingwood, Geelong and Hawthorn with Freo. So four grand finals. They had the draw and go. Yep. And in all of them, they've been right in the game, or bar the second, the drawn, the replay game. But he hasn't had sides that could kick enough goals. That's always been it. It's a common theme. And he hasn't ever had a forward line. And he had it potentially with Rory Lobb, Jesse Hogan, Michael Walters.
Michael Walters. Matera found form this year.
Matera.
And it's just all fallen apart again.
Tabernet got injured.
He was coming on our own.
Pierce got injured. You know, he hasn't had much luck.
They beat GWS up there. They've couple of games this year you've seen, and when Hogan was up and running, you go, wow, there's something there.
But they've lost to three bottom sides in Melbourne, Carlton and Hawthorn in the last few weeks and got thrashed by West Coast by 91 in a game that's normally no more than a 3 or 4 goal game. So he has just dropped right off. I'd like to see Ross back in Melbourne coaching Carlton or one of those teams here. I think he's a premiership coach. I think he'll get there eventually. I just think the circumstances haven't been right for him.
Now, a few other topics, gentlemen. Jaden Stevenson, a photo of him in Queensland was taken and put on social media, and it's divided the footy world. Some are outraged that he's in the sun while his team's struggling. Others are like, and Nathan Buckley's one of these, the kid needs to have a life.
I've got no issue with it whatsoever.
Ando?
Same as Robbo, except be smart about it.
Tell of your mates media,
you don't flaunt it. I mean, you'd be a bit smarter than that. But James Stevenson seems like a natural, free-spirited young kid who perhaps doesn't always think through the consequences, like most of us didn't at his age. What is Jaden, 20 years old?
21.
Yeah, okay,
20,
well, yeah. I mean, but that's the only knock.
Thinking through things at 20. Sorry, Brian, thinking through things at 20. You weren't even thinking.
Try 40.
No, you didn't. You didn't think about much when you were 20, but he's probably already been through a really hard spell of training. He's got, 5 weeks left, and I would say they're going to hammer him over the next 5 weeks as well. I've got no doubt that he will be doing the work. Unfortunate photo, but anyway, he'll be right, and he would have already done a lot of work.
He's got so many similarities to it, this 2019 season for Collingwood, as the 2011 season did, which was Mick Malthouse's last year there. when they were the best side during the year, I would have said quite clearly. And then they had, there was Heath Shaw, Didak, they got injuries well. Mick went on the footy show. Everything just sort of took away from where they should have been. And they lost a grand final that they would look back on and think they should have won. This year's just starting to have that sort of feel about it.
Now, the Richmond juggernaut is rolling. They're suddenly winning the flag. What about Alex Rance? Brendan Gale said he's way ahead. We know he's way ahead. Is it a risk worth taking? Will Damien Hardwick do it? What do you think?
No.
No, I don't think so either. Unless he's back in the next 3 weeks. He's got to play two games in the VFL. He's got the week off. Then you start, let's be honest, a four-week AFL finals campaign. He can't start playing then.
So his choices are come back, risk it, and miss the entire 2020 season.
Blow the next year up, yep.
Or don't risk it and come back and play round one 2020. And speaking to a couple of orthopaedic surgeons over the past week, they're really strongly against him doing it.
Are they?
Really?
Where do you run into orthopaedic surgeons?
I'm doing a story on the man who had the first knee reconstruction in Australia's history.
Really?
55 years ago, a bloke called Peter Stewart, who's in North Melbourne's team of the century. And it was a guy who Brian would remember called John Grant did the operation. He, in turn, taught John Bartlett, who's a good mate of BT's, John Hart as well, and then through to David Young and Ian Henderson and Hayden McLean as a whole, Julian Fellow, all the ones who do it now, David Young. But this was the guy who did the very first one. John Grant's not alive, unfortunately, but John Bartlett, I rang him and we're talking away, and he's a ripper bloke, John Bartlett. Barge knows him really well. And he said, oh, damn, John, I'm sorry, but he said, you just caused me to miss a fish. He was up at Cairns fishing, and he took a really good one, the first one he took for the morning. And he gets this call from a bloody pesty journo, and he takes his mind off the job and loses a snapper.
It might be a red emperor or something. Hey, Marlon. That's a great story. That's a great story, John. That is a terrific story. And just very quickly, was it a success? Was he happy with how it turned out? Was it an ACL?
ACL, Robbo. So the surgeon, John Grant, they'd never been done in Australia.
Yeah.
He'd read a journal, because there's no internet.
Yeah.
There's no fax machines. He'd read a journal from a guy called Kenneth Jones in the States, and it came to Australia, so he read it. And from reading that journal, he did the operation on Peter Stewart. He said to Peter Stewart, are you prepared to go through this? So they took a graft from his patella tendon, which Brian and I have sat in an operation, actually seen that done with John Bartlett out in Warringal, and did it. And Peter Stewart went on to play. Well, he was a state player for North Melbourne, team of century, and then went to West Perth and played in two premierships for West Perth.
Where's this story going?
Tomorrow.
Good on you. Yeah. That's a great story.
Great story. It is. You know, in the US, right now in the US, if you have an ACL and you're an NFL player, you have an ACL repair, reconstruction, you are back in 6 months. And in Australia, we're much more conservative and we take 12
months.
Yeah, we
do. But depending on, Barch, depending on how much damage is done in the initial tear. So if you do meniscus damage, if you do cartilage damage, and Alex Rance did none of that.
Yes.
So like Tyson Golsack, he had a clean tear or rupture of his anterior cruciate. With that, you have a chance to get back in 5 or 6 months.
But the cartilage is not the issue. The meniscus is not the issue because that repairs quickly. The issue is getting strength into the grafted ligament. And that's the thing. Now, there's two different ways you can do that. You can get a thicker ligament put in, which is not the standard ACL. It comes from a different part of the body, so that can be thicker, so it can be stronger. But you've got to give the graft time to grow around the bone and wrap around and secure itself. Now, it is interesting. What I'm saying is, in America they do it in 6 months. We choose to do it in Australia over a 12-month period because we choose to do it. That's what we do. But in America, they're saying, no, the graft is strong enough after 6 months. It is good enough for them to go
Brian,
after six.
With Alex Rance, if he was going to play this year, would you put him straight into a final or would you need him to play a couple of games coming in the lead-up to the finals?
No, I think he needs to play one game in the VFL. Not not to prove his fitness, because he will have done that at training. I'll just tell you
the mental side.
Psychologically, the thing about a knee reconstruction and coming back to play, the number one thing for me is, can I do that? And you need to test it. So, for instance, if you jump on someone's shoulders and take a mark and bend your knee right back to you, so your heel's on your bum, and you do that in a game or a training, you say, oh, I just did that. I'm right to go. Your mind's right. Or if you turn a difficult turning circle and you get through it. So it's the psychological hurdles. And they are only presented every now and then in a game. They're not presented every time you go for the footy. So he just needs a game to psychologically convince himself that he'd be right to go.
Score reviews, gentlemen. We've had a development, and Eddie Maguire's got his fingertips all over it. RMIT is going to be the house, we think, for the bunker. What are our thoughts? They're going to get one up for the finals, hopefully, touch wood, but then...
No, they are. They've declared they will be up for the finals. What do you know, what do you know of this match review or the score review or this review centre, Brian?
No, I don't know a lot other than it is going to be up, as you say, for sure. I just hope, I mean, it doesn't matter. You can have all the bells and whistles in a match review bunker and it can look great and, you know, you have 35 screens and you go, wow, look at that, wow. But unless you've got the right driver. So hopefully what they'll do is with all the match review guys that are there at the moment, deciding they'll pick the best two or three, slap them in the room, and we'll have the best two or three in the country making decisions, which should get a better result.
You have an interesting technology, more so than I do. When it hits the goalpost, we can normally see that. So I totally get that, and that's been an added bonus for sure. With the fingers back, I hear you sometimes or somebody else say, oh, yeah, yeah, you clearly see the fingers bent. And I can't see it.
Yeah, I can't see it either,
Is that
Brian.
Fair?
Yeah, I agree with you.
Or the other way around. Is that, where do you sit with that, Bart?
Well, I'm 56 and you're 66.
No, I'm not sick. Don't cut
so
it.
your eyes are a bit harder than mine and you've probably lost a little bit of sight. But no, I think you can. I'm like you. Sometimes I sit there and I hear a commentator or someone say, oh, yeah, that was touched. And I go, what do you mean it was touched? So sometimes that, but I guess that's how many times you see it and what you're looking for. But, I think, you know, look, remember, it was never brought in to test those ones touched off the boot. I reckon we should pull that out.
Couldn't agree more.
I just think it should be the post only. That's why it was brought in to determine goal line decisions, not...
It's a Sherrod Willingham, Tom Hawkins... Yes, it was. Stuff up.
Then how did it get to the touched off the boot for 45 minutes? Because we've all played the game. And when it's touched off the boot, generally there's that nick noise, you know, that there's a noise. And everyone can hear it. And you say, oh, well, that's touched. Clearly now, we've got to the point where we're looking at the bending of a single finger with no noise. That is not what it was introduced to do.
The horse has bolted, hasn't it, on that?
No, he can pull it back. Okay. I'm really worried. And I had this discussion with Chris Scott and Jared Waitley after the show on Monday night. I said, soon... we'll be getting videos of everything to decide what is wrong. Why can't we have, can we have the uniqueness of Australian rules football? Like, every umpiring decision now is scrutinised so much. Oh, that's wrong, that's wrong, that's wrong. And then if the AFL doesn't come out, they say, well, come out and say it's wrong, AFL. When they finally come out and say, they say, oh, but it's okay, the AFL this week said the Scott Thompson decision was wrong. It's like it placates everyone. It's only his decision. It's a wrong decision, but it's only a decision. I think we're just going too crazy on replays and right and wrong.
Maybe the broadcasting is the thing that they can pull back a bit. So Channel 7 and Fox Footy, maybe they're the two that can pull back a little bit. And maybe they're told by the AFL that they're not allowed to show the replays of those, you know, ones that are touched off the boot 50 metres out, just get on with the game. Don't even bother showing the replay. No one will even know the difference. I mean, that's what used to happen. Yeah. We never, ever, ever replayed those off the boot, and all of a sudden...
Certainly the grounds do that, don't they? I reckon at MCG, you sometimes look to the big screen and you don't get the replay you want because they're used... Well, they don't. They're under instruction to do that. The thing I have a problem with broadcasters doing, Budge, is when there's a bad injury, replaying it time and time again. I just can't see any upside in doing that.
Yeah, and I think there is some limits. Like, you know, the edge technology on the post for us hitting the post, you know that we can have a video replay ready to go. That is, the networks can have a video replay that clearly shows it touching the post. If the edge technology says it hasn't hit the post, then we are not allowed to show that replay.
Yeah.
So we can only show the replays of the edge that the edge use to gain their decision.
Very unique game. We've got a great game. And we want to make it perfect. And I just don't think we can make it perfect. We can try to make it perfect. I accept that. We've got to make it as best as we can possibly make it. But we are having blow-ups over individual free kicks. The games go for 110 minutes. There's mistakes made. Like Jamie McMillan dropped a ball on the weekend, five metres or 2 metres from the goal square. The Lions picked it up. Might have been Charlie Boy. Kicks a goal. No one talking about that. It's all about Fisher. You lost the game because you paid a bad free kick. I mean, I think we just get...
Well, may have lost the game. There's no guarantee.
No,
North,
exactly.
North would have won the game anyway.
Exactly. We are just so big on getting absolutely everything right in football.
Speaking of getting things right, can Geelong get their things right?
Well, Robbo was with Chris Scott last night, Scotty, off the show. So what degree of confidence did he give you that he can turn it, he and his players,
that's in
and
front
his
of
coaches
me,
can turn it around?
Well, that's a pretty big question, John, to reveal the private conversation with the coach in the kitchen at Fox Footy.
What was your body
degree of degree of confidence, Rob, I'm asking you for? Just that level.
There is a degree of confidence, and there's got to be. There's got to be. They've hit a bit of a ditch, and they're in it. And they'll get themselves out of it. Time will tell. But they've done enough right this year to suggest that their best is good enough. And I've got a suspicion myself, and Scotty just did a video in the office just before. I reckon it's a tough gig being top of the ladder, two games clear, going through winter. I really do. I think there's a motivational thing sometimes. I think some of the young kids, like Mickey Atkins' boy, is probably hit the wall a little bit.
Yep.
Tom Hawkins has been slowed down the last period of time. You know, I would argue that Tom's the most critical person at Geelong. When he's playing well, everyone plays well. So there is a degree of confidence, but that doesn't mean that there's not a degree of concern about where they're going at the moment and their slow ball movement.
That game on...
Come on, you blokes. Don't worry about the Cats. Look, Sydney, Fremantle, North, Brisbane, Carlton. They're going to win four out of the five.
Exactly.
Absolutely certainties and might even win five.
So Sydney's in Sydney. Then they fly to Perth for Frio. Brisbane's in Brisbane.
That's
they're not certainties.
They should win those games.
Brisbane's the only one. They'll beat Sydney, Fremantle, North and Carlton. Sure.
It's interesting watching Geelong. You didn't see the game on Sunday because you're up on the Alice with Gilly with that magnificent suit that he had with his black runners.
You've got me looking at the runners.
They are cult figures, those black runners of black and white with the white stripes, aren't they, on Gilly's shoes, the Adidas runners, I reckon he wears. But, Barge, that game, the Geelong Hawthorn game, is very unusual for Geelong supporters watching their side, where they've given the corridor up to the other side, and Hawthorn owned the corridor on that match. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did. We spoke about that. A little bit on air, a little bit off air. I'm not going to talk about it. They defended poorly and they attack poorly, but it's round 19. I'm with Barge a little bit. Their motivational levels will
if lift. You were a bookmaker, if it's Robinson Gallen Taylor bookmaking firm, who would be the $4 favorite for the premiership right now?
West Coast.
Yeah, you're West Coast and Scotty or Barge.
I'd still have Geelong.
Yeah, I'd have,
and I'm
Richmond with you. I'd have Richmond $4, West Coast at $4.50 and Geelong at $5. So I think it's a skew because it's the other way around.
I'm big on they can realign this. There's time. It's just a speed hump. They have
$5 chance you can win a premiership.
Yeah. Exactly.
We've got a terrific final series ahead. We've got great stories. And we haven't even spoken about Brisbane today.
Brisbane are second on the ladder.
Brisbane, and that means the team's got to take it off them. If Brisbane can knock over Geelong in 3 weeks' time at the Gabba, and I actually think...
Hawthorn this week's a test in Tassie. They've got to get through a few little hurdles.
I think Hawthorn have done really well in the last couple of weeks. I think Brisbane will get them. I think they got them last year in Tassie. They're not afraid of many teams, the Brisbane Lions.
All right, gentlemen, we've got to take a break because we've got a very special guest coming up, Mark Bomber Riley.
It's great in the game when you actually get a whole lot of different multiple goal kickers. And that is that. The Saints are going to win under Brett Ratton.
Welcome back to the Round 19 Super Footy Podcast with Tab. Who are you backing, Mark? Now, we've got interim coaches, caretakers. They're all the buzz, Mark, and we've found one of the best in the business. Mark Bomber-Riley. Welcome, Bomber.
Hi, Scott. How are you?
Now, let's go back to 2007. You found yourself where Reece Shaw, David Teague and Brett Ratton have found themselves in charge at Melbourne.
Yes, yeah, round 10 or 11. What was it? Round 10
round
or 11?
Round 14, I think.
14. Well, there you go. 9 games to go, I think. We played the Navy Blues the first week. I remember that. And Dennis did us a favour. He dropped Favola because he sat on the ground over in Frio the week before. So that made the task a little easier. How did we approach it? Well, it was unusual, very unusual year, because we were quite bullish about ourselves coming off, I think, a semi-final loss in Perth in 2006. And we had a very good record at the G that year. And then might be the Melbourne curse. We had a lot of postseason operations and injuries, and we just never caught up and ended up nil. And the club decided to part ways, and Chris Fagan and I think the club decided that I should coach the last 9 games. So it was a great experience, but it was pretty hard work because we travelled 5 times and we had a lot of guys out in pasture, list management, planning, you know, in hospital and ops. But yeah, it was a bit of fun, but it was hard work.
Did you, can you remember what results you got, Bomber?
Well, I'd be lying if I said no. I think we were 3 wins and 6 losses. And we had a couple of losses, Fremantle in Perth, I think. We played Sydney up in Canberra, lost, Brisbane up in Brisbane. That was a home game. Back in the good old days, we used to give a home game to the Lions. That was a bit of fun.
When did you find out, mate, that you weren't... Did you apply and do an interview for the senior coaching job?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, that was a good experience too, Mark. So whether they were just taking me along for the ride because I was doing them a favour or, helping out, someone had to be the caretaker. But no, I went through the process and I found out the Thursday night prior to the last game of the year, which was actually coaching against Rats, who was the caretaker coach of Carlton. So I think it was ill-informed, called the Cruiser Cup, 3:30, last versus second last at the MCG on a Sunday afternoon, with both sides not wanting to get a bruise on them because they didn't want to damage their Mad Monday prospects.
When you say ill-informed Cruiser Cup, do you want to make some headlines here, Bummer? Why was it bruise-free? And how did you coach? Did you coach to win and did Rats coach win?
Yeah, I remember Paul Williams, a great Collingwood and Sydney player, was helping me out, assistant coach, and Barry Prendergast. I remember them in the box when I was doing my head in at one stage over Travis Johnson not playing on anyone, because Travis used to work.
He had 42 on a back flank.
Yeah, but he used to work. Robbo, he used to work on the auspices that if he could see you, he was on you. Anyway, I think he had 42 at one end and Heathy Scotland had about 40 at the other. So it was a bit of that sort of circle work game. And I was doing my quints at one stage, and then Paul Williams turned around and said, someone told Bomber that he's the only person at the MCG that knows that the Demons are going to win. Is he the only bloke that knows that they're going to win? Because Carlton had finished, I think, four less than, what was the old rules? 4 or less in 2 years in a row got you an automatic priority. And the Demons, that was their first year of 4 and less. So anyway, that's why I never could work out. I'm not as smart as some of you blokes, but I could never work out why it was called the Cruiser Cup, because I didn't think Melbourne were ever in line for a priority choice.
You can answer this question if you want to answer it, Bomber, but I'm going to ask you. Do you truly believe Carlton tried that day?
Do I truly believe that they tried? What's the standard answer, Mark? Everyone tries when they go out on a football field.
Bomber, you're a good football person.
The incentive was fairly high to lose.
I'll say it again. Do you think Carlton tried to win to lose that day?
Is this on the record or off the record?
This is on the record.
There were a couple of shifty, let's say, creative manoeuvres done.
Are we glad that the football's got away from that spectre of tanking which existed at that time?
I would have thought so.
I think I agree,
it's
Scotty.
It's gone.
It seems to me that it's disappeared in the. And the real want to win, no matter where you are on the ladder now, is just so important. I mean, look at Melbourne now, your old team, Bomber. I mean, they're doing everything. They pushed the Eagles on the weekend.
Yep.
And just by a couple of little things, that they could have won that game, and it would have done so much to the team.
Bomber, just a bit about the player spike in performance. It always baffles everyone, but it happens. It just St Kilda, we saw it. They sacked the coach, caretaker in, and they just spike. Have you got a theory as to why?
Oh, I've got a number of theories. I've never been asked, Joey. I've never been anyone short of a theory or the ability to give it. That sometimes has led to the detriment of my career. There's a couple of reasons. I think that the fact that the players actually go, oh, shit, I've had some of my fingerprints are actually over impacting a bloke and his family's life, so I need to actually do something about it. I think, I'm not certain about any of the most recent examples, but over time there has been some examples where players are actually really happy to see the back of a coach, so you get that instantaneous spike, and then you get that short body of work that when the assistant comes in, he goes, well, I've got nothing to lose. I'm actually not coaching for a career or for finals. I'm just going to release the shackles, take them on, risk without penalty, that sort of stuff. So as I always say in footy, it's never one thing why you get a positive or negative outcome. It's usually the accumulation of a myriad of things and all of the above.
Do you think Reece Shaw's going to defy the odds and become a caretaker who hangs on? Is that your, from looking on from afar?
I would have thought he's a certainty.
Rats?
I don't know about rats. You know, one from one, every caretaker wins their first game, don't they? Oh, no, I read somewhere where it's still 50-50.
Yeah, yeah, I was in a good column.
I was in today's Herald Sun.
Very good column. Bomber. Which one of you guys wrote it?
I wrote that this morning.
Well, I only read the good stuff. Yeah.
What about David Teague?
He's doing a wonderful job, isn't he, Teague? Like, when I first turned up to Carlton with Rats in the pre-season 07, Teague was a playing coach for the Northern Bull Ants, yeah. Just the Bull Ants then, and he was still fashioning the blonde streaks and the mullet, the centre part. So now he's got those trendy glasses and natural coloured hair, but he's doing a wonderful job. Like, you can actually go and watch Carlton play now, whereas 6 weeks ago you couldn't.
How much, and you know Carlton a little bit, you work there, how much do you think the small brand that Teague is will go against him? Because he clearly knows footy. But the small brand Teague versus, you know, the Carlton's philosophy generally, let's go after the big dogs.
Look, it's a very good question, Mark, isn't it? I guess employing, an assistant from Alistair's sort of stable and that not working and Brendan not being a luminary sort of high-profiled ex-player or coach of the game, that it would, that would probably be a bit detrimental. But they're seeing him operate firsthand. And, you know, Hawthorn took a punt with Alistair back in 2004 when it used to be the model that they would just, employ Hawthorn people, and I think they went against their model and got great success from that. Sometimes you've got to dare to be different. I don't really know. It's not their style, is it, Carlton? They like brand and big name, but you would have thought that after Dennis, and then they went to young Ratton, and then they went to Mick, and then they went to a younger Bolton. Is there a one-size-fits-all, or have to have a process? Do you just have to have a process in place where it actually allows you the best chance to pick the best person? And that would be a concern for me if I was a Carlton supporter, because, I don't know, they've sacked a couple of CEOs, a football manager and three coaches in 6 or 7 years.
Yeah, you don't go to Carlton for your super, do you?
Lastly, what about Rats? You worked intimately with him. Second time around, what do you think? He should get another crack at it?
Look, I'm great mates with Rats, so I'm very biased, because people that know me know that I'm very loyal to good friends, and he's a good friend. I thought he did a super job at the Blues the first time, even though he was very ill-equipped to be handed the keys. But I thought his improvement over those 5 years was tracking, you know, in the absolute right direction. Yep. And then given how long he's been away and then where he spent six of those years, you know, he spent six of those years at the Hawthorn Footy Club with Clarko and Fags, and, you know, that's the University of Football Coaching. That's undoubtable. That, and then now to go to St Kilda and then, you know, to work in a different environment with different athletes and then to get six games at it himself, he just has to be better. He's a stock on the rise.
It's really interesting, Bomber, and I've spoken to Brett about this. So don't feel, not for a story, but just personally about the tragedy that took him and his family when he lost his son Cooper. Brett, what's been happening in coaching? We're starting to look for the older coach, the more experienced life coach, and when we say life coach, that is people who've experienced situations in life, and they're not young, they're not 32, 33, 34 like Vossi was, and Hurdy was around about mid-30s. We're going, Richo was 48, Fags was 55. We're going sort of the care empathy road. How much do you think the tragedy of Cooper's death would have shaped Rats in dealing with the younger men that he comes across in footy and his coaching, if at all?
Yeah, I can't answer the question exactly how it would have shaped him, but I can only imagine how devastating that will be forever. And I, as he said to me once, it doesn't become less devastating. You just learn each day how to cope possibly a little bit better with it. I think what it's done, look, and from a football perspective, is that when those sort of things happen in your life, they are immediate feedback that winning and losing football games are quite inconsequential. We're a big game in Australia, played nowhere else in the world except for China once a year or whatever. So it allows you to look at the global picture, and then it allows you to step back and say, do I really want to do this? And I know, because I'm good mates with Rats, I know he's, you know, is it for me? Probably not for a couple of years. And in the last, and it hasn't just been the last couple of weeks, but for the last 6 or 7 months, he's made a decision that he wants to put his hat back in the ring and give himself every chance to be a senior coach again. Whether that happens or not, time will tell. And I don't think that the Cooper's sad passing was a catalyst or anything, Mark. I just think it was another thing in a person's life and a family's life that helps you come to decisions going forward. And he wasn't interested in becoming a senior coach a while back because he was still scarred. He was still scarred from the exit because he still, you know, he has dark blue blood running through his veins. He was there, you know, from Yarra Glen as a 15-year-old kid and stayed there, you know, most of his adult life. So, yeah, to hear him passionate again about footy coaching indicates to me, because he doesn't do many things half-hearted. He goes at them pretty hard.
Bomber, that's great insight. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Bomber.
Just quickly, where do we find you in the amateurs?
Yes, mate. It's just in your blood, you know. I didn't have the energy or time to continue on, and I was getting a bit old and fat anyway. So, but when I had the year off, any sort of involvement with footy, I was a pain in the ass to my kids and wife. And so somehow I found myself on that little short track from Sandringham over to St. Bernard's.
Oh, I'm real short.
Yeah, a couple of nights a week, and a wonderful community club. And I've really enjoyed the VAFA Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock. So, and great guys like Joey and, it's just a good club and good community spirit. And I still really enjoy doing a bit of footy coaching. As I said, it's been a huge part of my life and my family's life. It was interesting when we exited the AFL, Mark, we came back to Melbourne, and we sat around at the start of the 2000 and I think, I don't know, 14 or 15 season and said, gee, who do we barrack for and how do you get a ticket? and because the family just followed the colours the old man was wearing, and you always got a couple of freebies every week for your family to go along. So anyway, it's a mixed bag now who the family follow. I know I still love my footy, and I loved watching Mace kids play, and if a good mate like Rats gets another go at it, I'll even take a bit more interest.
Yeah, good on you. Hey, Bomber, great to talk to you again, mate. It's been fantastic. Thanks for taking our call and sharing a little bit of information and stories, and hope you don't mind yourself being in headlines tomorrow accusing Carlton of tanking. Anyway, I'm only joking,
the
mate.
The last time bloody Johnny Anderson spoke to me about Brett and Carlton and whatever, I thought we were off the record, but yeah, there was a couple of drive-bys in that one too.
We're only joking. It'll stay in. Hey, great to talk to you, Bomber.
See you, Mark. See you, Scott.
It's been a good year. It's been a long year.
But it's gone from round 12 to 19 quickly
in my life.
Yes, it's been a going
week
on.
After week.
Now,
Collingwood, Richmond, Friday night. Nathan Buckley.
Under siege.
He's not happy. Let's look at how do we process as journalists. Do we write, is Bucks filling the pressure?
Well, he has a regular media spot. He's good in the media. He appears a couple of times a week. Yep. And he's on the defensive, as you would be. I get that. Is he feeling the heat?
Does he feel the heat? I would imagine if I was an AFL coach, what would really shit me off is the amount of people who are talking about footy.
It annoys them.
They know, the coaches know more about footy than journos. They know more about footy than former players. And they know more about the current footy than former coaches. Okay? Now, all those different people have got different levels of contributing to the game.
Yes.
Some journos in situations like me where I can talk about what I think Mason Cox is a really big issue at Collingwood.
And he is.
And he is. Now, Nathan Buckley could turn around and say, what in the hell does he know?
Yeah, right? But that's the wrong way to approach it if you're an under-siege
coach. No, but
coach.
If everyone is attacking Collingwood at the moment, it seems to be a lot. Buck's got a little bit hot under the collar. You know what? It'll mean nothing.
No.
Friday night if they win.
Well, if they win.
What if they lose?
Well, everyone's thinking they're going to. It's more the way they go about it Friday night. If they just lay over and the Richmond tsunami just goes wave after
so
wave.
So I think it's more than that. A good effort's not good enough.
Good effort.
We're at round
the way
19.
They play, I mean.
It's 4 points or not 4 points. Because if they lose this game, they are out of the top four.
Yeah.
And by results over the weekend, they could be sixth. So they've gone from second to sixth. It could be a huge.
But have they got the bodies to be able to handle Richmond at the moment?
Well, they did the week before when they travelled to West Coast to handle West Coast. It is an enormous game Friday night, isn't it?
It's huge, and it's a classic Friday night blockbuster. We love it. Now, I'll throw a couple others at you that I think are interesting. Port Adelaide GWS. It's off the radar, I know. But Port Adelaide, Jekyll and Hyde, GWS, we were off them, now we're back on them.
Back on them.
Adelaide shows up, again, we talk about them possibly sneaking into
the... They showed up last week, but they played against Richmond, and Richmond just deconstructed them.
Well, they had Wines out. They had a few
bodies
out.
I don't think Wines is back this week either.
No.
So they deconstructed them, which Richmond tends to do, and they just strangled teams, Richmond. They poured out a couple of opportunities, but they were never really threatened. So they go home, they take on GWS. Now, GWS aren't going to have Kelly, and they're not going to have Cornelio. It's a big, big ground.
They're not going to have the emotion of that. Well, no. It's hard to replicate how well they went.
So it's a whole new ball game. It's a whole new mindset. And they go in against Port Adelaide. Now, Port Adelaide lost on the weekend. What's their mindset? You're right, Scotty. At this early stage of the week, who will you be tipping?
I'm Port Adelaide. The Jekyll and Hyde. I'm all over that. They'll bounce back.
I can't stand the Jekyll and Hyde nature of Port Adelaide.
It's just facts.
Because I'm always on the Hyde when the Jekyll, and when they're Jekyll, when they're Hyde, I'm Jekyll.
All right, last one. If you're Don Pike and you're walking off the MCG at 5:03, having lost to Carlton, how are you feeling about your job security long term?
Jeez, you saved the really big questions to the last.
The listeners have hung on and I've gone bang.
Is job security?
Because they're a mess.
I think he'll be right for next year. They have another poor one. There'll be
another one? How many more do you want?
Well,
it's two full years from a grand final team.
So they're going grand final into bad camping.
Into mess
this year. So you're saying if it falls apart at Adelaide over the next 5 weeks, that Don Pike could be replaced as coach.
Knowing the way they work over there, they have a short fuse for this sort of stuff.
Yeah, they do. But I think there's greater understanding of their list. They're the oldest team on the list
on
the league.
Yeah,
but they thought that they were going to contend. So they, what, get grand final in 2017? They fall apart in 2018. Did they think they were going to bounce? And now we're approaching 40 games since the grand final appearance. Eddie's looking every inch of those extra 40
Texas
games.
Likely to
Texas,
be playing.
Texas falling in a hole. Midfield slow. They need leg speed. They've got some issues.
Carlton, resurgent David T. Carlton.
Yeah, when I'm indecisive, I barrack for the story. So I'll be picking Carlton.
I love that. That's why you're the best in the business.
Good to talk to you, pal.
Okay, let's get to Jared Daffy at the tab. Afternoon, Jared.
Afternoon, Scotty.
Big round. Now, I've got a couple of games I want to hear about. Collingwood, Richmond. It's a cliche, but it's a blockbuster. What are the punters thinking?
It is a blockbuster. Now, Collingwood are the outsiders. I suppose on their recent form, that's justified. $2.40. The Tigers, $1.58. But, of course, back in March, we saw a big, big win to Collingwood over Richmond. Richmond were missing several troops at that point in time, and their recent form's been pretty good. But a big game, but there is money for Collingwood to spring an outside upset here at $2.40.
What's the line? What are you going to give us?
We've got 9.5 start there to the pie.
Oh, so I'd want more than that.
Really?
It's a bit tight.
Okay.
I'd like double figures from you.
We'll see.
What about St Kilda and Melbourne?
Well, who would have thought that this... Yeah, well, who would have thought this would be one of the games that are around, but it is on the back of that much improved performance from St Kilda last week. And Melbourne, well, they weren't entirely disgraced in Alice Springs.
They were good.
They were, but of course, the problem with that is that they have got to come back from up there. And whilst they are the outsiders, St Kilda, $2.10 outsiders, and Melbourne, $1.74. Most of the early money is with the Saints. And of course, they played already this season, and St Kilda won by 40 points, so nearly 7 goals on that occasion. So another fascinating game in what's a terrific round.
And then on Sunday, Arvo, we're back to Marvel, and I'm still recovering from the Western Bulldogs losing to St Kilda. Can they bounce back against Fremantle?
Well, punters believe they can. And again, another side that have played already, or two sides that have played already this year in Frio, and Frio won by 19 points. They've got a really good record against the Bulldogs. But can they win at Marvel Stadium? $1.55, the Bulldogs, $2.45, Frio. The line there is 11.5 points, Scott. And as is normally the case when Fremantle travel, punters more than happy to be on the home side there.
Now, flag betting, it's every week it's intriguing. Richmond are coming, Geelong are drifting, Collingwood's drifting. Where do we find it this week?
Well, I guess all it does is point out it's so much more open than what perhaps the prices alluded to for the past couple of months. Now, Geelong are favourites at $4. West Coast are a mover from last week. They're into $4.50. Richmond are the side that punters want to be on, though, Scott. Their third pick at $5, but most of the money's been for them. Collingwood back out to $7.50. Brisbane, $9, but we're not seeing any serious flag action for them. I think people think, but it's Brisbane. But all they can do is win. GWS back into $11. Essendon, $17. And that looks like you're right. It's in out to $51 for Adelaide and Hawthorn.
And the Brownlow's getting a bit confused. I mean, Tim Kelly's cooled off. Brodie Grundy's cooled off a little bit. Is there any movers this week?
Well, there has been. Tim Kelly back out to $4. You're quite right with him. And I guess the same applies to Lachie Neal, who's been tagged rather badly. He's out to $4.75. Dangerfield's a mover. He's into $5. Fife, who we haven't seen for a couple of weeks, he's at $7. Cripps at $8. But then the ones behind those players, they have attracted some sort of support. The Bont at $13. Brodie Grundy at $15. And Luke Shuey sneaks into the market now at $31. But well, it's a wide-open affair there. Tim Kelly, the easing favourite this week. Money for Paddy Dangerfield.
Thank you. That was Round 19 Superfooty Podcast for TAB. Who are you backing? See you next week.